dedicated to Agent Chemo. Welcome to Level 7, Episode 81. Agent Carter, Season 1, Episode 7, Snafu.
Welcome to Level 7. A podcast about Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's a magical place.
Greetings, agents. It's Agent Daniel Butcher, straight from the hub. Considering the fact there's only one more episode to go of Agent Carter. But luckily, I'm not alone as I reflect on this matter, because I'm here with...
me.
Yes, Agent Me.
It's Ben. Ben Avery, and I'm here. Daniel. I'm not in the hub, though. I'm in the playground.
It's kind of much more fun in the playground.
Yeah.
The hub, it's always so stodgy. So many files being moved around and people. It's not like we have windows that change every day.
The playground, you got all sorts of places where you could play hide and seek, you know, little nooks and crannies.
You have basements.
For weeks.
A basement, man. We don't have a basement.
Yeah. Storage down there. Lots of things to sort through and explore and organize and.
But we do have big, giant guns.
That is true. That is true. So, what are we here to do, Daniel?
Let's talk about Agent Carter, dude.
Let's do. We do not have much more time to talk about Agent Carter, do we?
Nope. Just one more.
One more next week.
Well, the good news is we got some more comic episodes coming up where we'll talk about her.
That's true. And you know,
we've already.
They said. The finale, the season finale. No, they did not say the series finale. They're hedging their bets. They're keeping the possibilities open.
Well, I believe they said she's been dominating Tuesday nights.
They did.
You know what, though? When I said comic episode, you know what I thought of?
No, I don't.
Ben, are we going to cover the very exciting return of Night Nurse and Night Nurse's own title coming in May? Because I'm not making it up.
She's getting her own title?
Yeah.
Well, she is one of the early ones, right?
Nope, she's in Netflix, so.
Yeah. Well, that's true. That makes her MCU worthy.
Maybe we'll do issue one.
Yeah, we'll do like we did with Ant-Man. Do issue one. I'm excited about our next comic episode. Our next comic episode will have... the Cinematic Universe, Ant-Man, right? Or did we already do that? It's been so long since I've read it.
No, we have not done it yet, to the best of my knowledge.
Okay, so we still got some actual MCU Agent Carter to go then.
Because
that
do.
Comic is actually canon to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's a prequel to Ant-Man, and it features a nicely aged Agent Carter. And yeah, so we get to see her again. And in between her appearance on her show and her appearance in Winter Soldier. So that's nice. That's good.
It is. And we'll just go straight from that to Night Nurse.
Well, we'll see. I mean, that Ant-Man issue 1, that was worth doing, but I picked up that issue 2, and I did not enjoy it.
And after Night Nurse,
we
can cover Cardiac.
What?
We'll cover Cardiac after Night Nurse.
Cardiac.
Isn't that the doctor who has the superpower of being a doctor?
I have no idea what you're talking about at this point.
All right. Somebody look that up who's not me.
You lost me.
Well, if you're lost, let's go to the mission. Let's go to the intelligence report.
Yes, let's do it.
S.H.I.E.L.D. Intelligence Report.
So Daniel, you got some good news. Good news this week.
I did. I won my eBay auction, and now I have the original appearance of Mockingbird in Marvel Team-Up. It was delightful. It was a beautiful Valentine's Day. Sitting next to my best girl. With my Mockingbird comic book in my lap. Yeah. Thumbing through it. finding out about that first appearance. It's good times. Good times.
You wrote about it for the website.
I did. Yeah. I did.
Nice little Valentine's Day comic review.
Dude, it was the best Valentine's Day ever that a guy could have. All my best girls.
I'll take your word for it there. So what's the news then, Daniel? You want to go ahead and say it? The good
Mockingbird,
news?
Mockingbird, series regular.
Series regular. She got upgraded.
Upgraded. Because you can't live
coach
without her.
To first class right there.
It's true. She'll be in the title credits. Do you think she'll get her own variant cover?
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
Clearly, I'm for this.
Yeah, I don't mind it. It puts me one step closer.
Clearly, you're for this.
It puts me one step closer to getting my crew, my homies, the Great Lakes Avengers. We're one step closer now.
No, dude, you've already been one step closer. Over the weekend, I watched an episode of Ultimate Spider-Man, and Squirrel Girl was in it.
Yeah, Squirrel Girl.
One step closer.
Not enough.
Just one step closer. I didn't realize that she really did have the superpower of controlling squirrels.
Yeah, that's the gimmick.
So it's like a low-rent Ant-Man without the flying.
Yeah. So you were thinking low-rent Batman without all the gadgets. Like she's just dressing up as a squirrel. Is that what you were thinking?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think that Bobby should just take her stabs and just hit her. I got nothing. Don't want to go violent. Don't want to go negative.
You were getting there, though.
I was.
You're close. Okay, so we've got a series regular. We also have a new series villain.
Bad news, though, in this article. It doesn't mention that Hunter's going to die.
No, but it does mention that Hunter is mentioned out of context with her.
Yeah, don't like it.
Yeah, they're mentioning a lot of different things, though, for next season, or the second half of this season, rather.
It's going to be a good one. All right, let's go to that other
article.
We've
got a villain. We've got Drea De Mateo. And, of course, you and I both know her from her scene-stealing turn on Desperate Housewives.
No.
Yeah.
No, Joey.
Joey, yes, played Joey's sister on the Friends spinoff.
Yes.
Is it sad that those are the only two things I've seen her in?
Actually, I've seen The Sopranos.
I have not. And there's something else.
She was really good in it. I mean, it wasn't necessarily a role that I liked, but she did a good job with it. Well, I mean, there's a lot of people in The Sopranos that aren't really people you like. You know what I mean?
Right. If you do like them...
You might be worried.
Yeah.
But her character goes down a dark path, and she does a good job. She did a good job portraying that dark path, and it sounds like with this that she's going to be going down a dark path.
It sounds like with this she's already at the end of that dark path, and she's taking a right-hand turn into darker path because she's hanging out with Skye's dad.
That should have been the headline right there. There, Cal's coming back.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we knew that, though.
Here's another thing you may not have caught on to, Ben, because you look at the name and you're like, Carla Faye Gideon. That name sounds not really...
That name sounds not familiar at all.
Well, but she is a Marvel character.
Yeah, she's a Daredevil character that I had to read a Wikipedia entry on her, and I still...
Very short one.
I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, they're just using the name I probably there.
But some agents with keen eyes have put into the possibility that maybe this will be a tie between Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Daredevil.
It could very well be. And I'm curious what those ties will be anyway. And even if there will be any ties. I mean, for as big of a world as we live in, shows like, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that's not even a show, that's movies and a show, two shows. Shows like Lost, shows like that, where you just, it feels so small because you keep bumping into people who, they happen to know each other, or they happen to have held something that someone else held at one point. And, yeah, so it could be Daredevil just be its own thing. Or maybe we'll see Spider-Man swinging by in Daredevil. Who knows?
He could.
Who knows? I'm still, Daniel, I'm thinking this summer I'm going to bust out my Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies. Just
to watch. If only we have the time, I might do that with you.
Oh, well, I'm not saying we have to do it together. I'm just saying I might bust them out. I haven't.
Ben, I'm coming to your house. We're going to watch them.
I don't think that's going to happen. Not because I don't want you to, just because it's like 15 hours to drive here.
Really? 15?
Maybe closer to 11.
I was going to 11? Wow. Really? No.
I think so.
I think you're overestimating, buddy.
How far is it for you to get to Chicago?
Not that long, like 6.
Okay, I'm 2. 3 hey, on a bad day.
Ben.
What?
I'm going to Chicago this summer.
Are you?
Totally am. Just saying.
Yeah, but I'm not interested in baseball.
It's lacrosse.
Which is baseball with footballs, right?
I'll bring a chair for you to sit on.
Yeah. I'd appreciate that. Okay, so we need to move on. Do we have any other news?
Oh, we talked about something else and I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, it's the Avengers trailer might possibly. This is just a heads up. It's not news because I haven't seen it confirmed anywhere. I've seen just a lot of speculation that there is a new Avengers trailer. That is not speculation. That's apparently a fact. But people are speculating that it'll be released on Tuesday night for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s mid-season premiere episode. So it's not news, but it is a heads up. Just be aware it might happen. Who knows?
There you go, buddy.
I don't know. So
sounds like maybe it's time to talk about a snafu.
I think so. Are you ready?
Much like the first trailer when it was released early, thanks to Hydra.
You ready for the mission report?
Let's do it.
All right.
Mission report.
Okay, so here we are, and it's Agent Carter, episode 6 or 7, depending on how you're keeping track. We are keeping track that it's episode 6.
7.
Okay. I'm keeping track of it as 6.
On my DVR, there's 2 separate entries for 1 and 2.
Okay. Well, next episode is the finale. This episode is the penultimate episode. I think we can agree on that label.
I think we can.
All right. Let's agree with
you
that.
And your fancy words, Mr. Writer Man.
Indeed. I am a fanciful writer of words. I just convinced people to never, ever read anything I wrote. Okay. So here we are.
Talking about snafu.
Here we are.
Go to 1943 Russia. Buddy.
Yeah, we're flashing back again, and we've got a guy reading a book. And what do you do when a guy on a TV show or in a movie is reading a book? You take note of that book, don't you?
Oh, thank heavens, because I didn't rewind it.
It's Faust. Phew. He's reading Faust, which is the classic deal with the devil story. And so you're getting the impression that our ringmaster here, our Russian doctor, is, you know, in the middle of making deals with devils or getting ready to make some deals with devils. And he is being convinced by another soldier to use his hypnotic powers as a replacement for anesthetic.
Well, they're out.
Yeah. Well, they need something. The guy who's wounded will die if he does not get his leg amputated. They have no anesthetic. And so if they're going to save the guy, they need Ringmaster to use his power. And yes, I am going to refer to him as Ringmaster because I can't remember his Russian name.
Is it – I believe it's Ivchenko.
Yes, it's something like that. And
but in my notes, yeah, instead of calling him Dr. Ivchenko, Ivchenko, I keep calling him Dr. Leviathan.
Okay. So Ringmaster, Ivchenko.
You be in denial, and I'll label him.
I'm not in denial. I have named him Ringmaster.
Yep. Okay.
I mean, they have not given us a code name for him. And so we are allowed to, until they say it on the screen, give him our own code name. Yep. I like the Ringmaster code name.
And I like Dr. Leviathan.
So we get a little bit of a touching scene. And this is kind of a through line for this episode here. But you get this kind of touching scene where he says, take me back to your last day before you left for war. And so the soldier does and talks about playing chess with his mother and all these kind of things. And his mother says, you can't stop time. You have to go. And you get a little glimpse of – it reminded me of MASH, actually. There's a couple episodes where, like, Hawkeye would have dreams or something like that. And the dreams would be invaded by reality. And that was what was happening here. He's sitting there with his mom on a picnic blanket playing chess. There's the doctor standing there. He's talking to the doctor. It's a very nice, ethereal type of situation. I like the setup. I like the way they're doing it with the doctor there and with the character interacting with the scene but talking directly to the doctor. And then behind the doctor, you can hear medical stuff going on. You can see someone on a cot or something like that. And so, you know, but pay no attention to that. Tell me more. And they're able to remove the dude's leg without having to give him any anesthetic because this hypnotism is so good and so powerful.
Though I do think it's still important to point out that reality still encroaches on it. And so it helps shows us the importance of focus, because you really do have to focus on the illusion in order to keep it up. Because this poor young man, he really was at the point where he was no longer buying it.
He was close, yeah. Yeah. Daniel, did you watch commercials tonight?
Some.
Did you happen to notice there was a Will Smith movie being advertised?
Yes.
Called
Focus.
Focus. I'm doubting it was intentional synergy, but I got a little snicker out of it. So we move from Russia in 43 to New York 3 years later. And we are getting the beginnings of the interrogation here. Sousa thinks Carter killed Krasinski. And Carter's just trying to convince them, you're on the wrong track. You're on the wrong path. And she's trying very hard to get them on her side. And she's failing quite spectacularly. And then you get this nice montage of three different interrogations. I like the way they did it, where, you know, she'll say an answer and then it'll bounce back to someone else asking a new question or responding to her answer that she gave to one of the other guys. Again, I mean, we're not even to the first commercial yet, but there's some good stylistic storytelling going on here.
Well, in storytelling wise too, we've also now seeing some flips. Mm-hmm. Sousa is the one bringing down the lamp. He's the one putting her in the hot seat. And Thompson is the one who's beginning to do the math. He literally says, this is not adding up.
Right.
He's beginning to question if Carter really is the villain. Now, part of that is the fact that I think he now feels more connected to Carter because of everything that happened when they were in Russia and what he confessed to. But he's using his noggin.
Well, he may be a misogynist, but he's not an idiot, other than the part about him being a misogynist. And quite possibly
and the fact
a
that
racist,
he's somewhat an
because
idiot.
You know, it's the 40s.
But and Carter will even call it out at some point. You know, Sousa's really looking at this as his opportunity to get some cred with the boys.
Oh, yeah. You know,
so he's coming down hard.
Yeah, she says, just you never had a chance to run the ball this far, but we're running out of time. And Dooley, you know, you get this nice little thing when that montage starts and you've got Thompson saying, I'm confused. And then you cut to Sousa saying, I'm sick. And then you cut to Dooley saying, I'm impressed. And then you get the montage all ends with Carter confronting them because she says, you know, I've been invisible. I've never been more than what you've created in your mind, that I'm this helpless kitten or I'm a coffee girl or you've put me up on a pedestal. And I like it.
Very much so.
I like it that this is not just a situation where you have writers from 2000-something writing about the 40s and looking back and saying, ha ha, this is ridiculous, and having their character, you know, Carter, has to overcome all of these obstacles. They're not just having her be the overcomer. They're allowing her to have an emotional response to her situation. And that rings true to me then. You have, she's getting upset. Rightfully so, she's getting upset. But she's not just this cool as ice, stone cold killer. She, to me, is a well-rounded individual who's allowed to have emotional responses, who's allowed to have, chinks in the armor, so to speak, where you can just kind of see, this is a touchy spot for her. And to me, this is good character building.
And every man in this room is being condemned. They've
absolutely, all three of them.
All three of them. Even Sousa has created an image of her that is not correct. Because the moment she says the girl on the pedestal, I almost get the sense that she's saying, you made me this thing and I'm not. I'm not that girl that you're putting up there. I'm not a prize. I'm not this thing. I'm me. But you've attempted to make me something that I'm not.
I got that speech once. It was a knife in the heart. She's like, you just put me up on this pedestal and I'm not who you think I am. And yeah.
But I would say to Sousa, dude, she's totally who you want her to be.
Well, yeah. If anyone belongs on a pedestal, Carter, she's pretty perfect as far as, the agent goes. She's tough. She's smart. She's funny.
She's really pretty. What every one of those three need to want to become. So when you do look at a role model, someone you're going to put on a pedestal, I'm sorry, Peggy, I kind of would. Not as a woman, but as a person. She's filled with honor. She's smart. She's capable. She has attributes that men, women, and children all need to strive for.
True.
If anything, I would say if she's got a negative, it's she takes too much blame and burden on herself. She spends too much time saying it's my fault instead of trying to fix it.
I'll agree with the saying it's my fault part, but she's pretty active when it comes to fixing things too, though.
It just takes her some time sometimes.
Well, it is the 40s. They don't have smartphones. They don't have fast cars. They don't have satellite imaging. It's going to take some time.
They only have self-warming armor.
Oh, man. We'll get to that. We'll get to that. So we're still not out to our first commercial break. Dottie, she's buying a baby carriage, which can't be good. I mean, there's nothing good that's going to come out of this. I had no idea what she was going to use it for.
The Untouchables all over again, buddy.
Oh, I was thinking Untouchables, yeah. And there's just nothing good that can come from this at all. Period. I mean, you got an evil person buying a baby carriage when they're not expecting a baby. Maybe if she was actually expecting a baby, you could expect some good to come out of it. But yeah, the foreshadowing here is telling me something pretty terrible is going to happen, because they're going to use this symbol of life for some sort of nefarious evil scheme. And it'll probably involve death. And spoiler, it does involve death. We'll get to that too. And then our last thing before we go to our commercial break, we're bringing everyone together because Jarvis comes in with a signed confession from Howard Stark.
Good old Howard. It's good to see him own up and protect his friend.
Yeah. So he interacts with the phone ladies. And I get the impression that they actually are running a legitimate switchboard. Like, it's not just cover. They're actually doing the job. But they're doing it knowing what's going on behind the door and with a gun underneath, just
in case. I will say, a few episodes ago, I thought maybe just the one on the end. Who's actually a named person on IMDb. I can't remember the character's name. But I was thinking maybe just the one on the end knew.
No. Not as of this episode.
Yeah, but tonight it was pretty clear. It was like, mm-hmm.
It's all of them. They all know. Because as soon as he says the name, Howard Stark, they all turn.
Yep, they all know what's up.
You know what it reminded me of, though? Is the beginning of Captain America, when they go into that antique shop and the shop lady's there with her gun and, you know, letting them into this super secret laboratory in the middle of Brooklyn. You know, that just seems to be the way SSR operates.
And truth.
Quite possibly S.H.I.E.L.D.
In plain sight.
Yep. So we have our first commercial break. Anything else you want to touch on here?
Nope.
We do get the Yauch. Yauch?
Not Yauch. Yauch is dead.
Yauch, he was hit by a truck. He was coming out of a bar. It's good. That was good thinking for Ringmaster when he gave him that impression to go walk in front of the truck.
Dracula Leviathan is brilliant.
We got some feedback about that. I can't remember if it was in one of the emails we're going to read today.
It is.
It is? Okay. Basically, they said that exact very thing. And when the email came, I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. And then they totally hang a lampshade on it here. So, yeah, good stuff. Come back from our commercial. And we get... basically, it comes down to Jarvis has the signed confession from Howard Stark. They're going to use that to trade the signed confession for Jarvis and Peggy. And Dooley will have nothing of it. He wants to exchange. When Howard gets here, we'll exchange, you know, you two for them. And when that happens, Peggy, you're leaving for good. We're never going to see you again. You are not an agent anymore.
And I think it's important for us to put a pin in this moment, because this is the moment where Dooley says, you're out.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a parallel moment later. But right at the moment, we've established in this first half that Dooley is completely done with Peggy and wants nothing to do with her.
Yes. So she cleans out her desk, which means she takes out two notebooks and a file, and the file is not hers. And then I think this is where Jarvis reveals that the confession is a forgery.
Yeah, Howard. Which didn't I think do it. Jarvis was nervous. He panicked.
I think we all knew that Howard wasn't really going to do it.
To be honest, I kind of thought maybe Howard had come through and was doing some sort of a confession, but it was, you know, a con by Howard somehow. That he was running a game to get Peggy out. And what we find out here is it's Jarvis running a game. He's panicky. He feels like they're close to having this case solved. They just need a few more hours.
Just a few more hours. What's that?
If we can just get Peggy out of the office for a few more hours, we'll have this solved. Everything will be taken care of. Howard comes home. He brings bikinis to the United States and starts S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Jarvis is wrong, but... Yeah. In the meantime, so we're getting some good Jarvis and Peggy banter back and forth. It's fun. It's light. It's funny. But then you also have Ringmaster in Dooley's office.
Dr. Leviathan spent a lot of time there.
Yeah, he did. And so you've got this back and forth with Peggy and Jarvis that's fun and light. But then you have this tension. I mean, it hasn't been ratcheted up, but it's there. You have Dooley being told, you know, oh, you should talk to your family. Tell me about your family. You have the doctor is doing Morse code on the windowsill, and, you know, talking to Dottie out in the other building. It's tense. It's not super tense, but it's good. I mean, you've got... the fox in the hen house, so to speak. And he's dressed up like a hen, and it's a Looney Tunes cartoon. Nobody recognizes him as a fox, but, I mean, this is good stuff. We cut to commercial when Peggy has decoded the Morse code because she notices him doing it on the windowsill. Leviathan is coming.
The one capable agent in the place is locked up.
But locked up in a place where she can see what's going on in the next office over. So that's good.
But let's also point out again, Jarvis is a veteran too. Jarvis also knows Morse code.
Yes, and her surprise when he reads the Morse code, she's surprised and he's hurt by that.
I mean, we don't hang a lampshade or use this as a plot point in this episode. But, you know, earlier Peggy condemns three men for making her something that she's not and therefore treating the true Peggy invisible.
And underestimating her, yeah.
Is this a hint that maybe Peggy's done the same thing with Jarvis?
I think maybe.
I mean, has she made him the bumbling gentleman butler when in fact he's much more capable than he puts on?
I don't know. After this episode, you see that he's capable. I don't think he's more capable than he lets on. I think we're seeing exactly how capable he is. I mean, this is a pretty poor plan that he's come up with. It's a better plan than no plan at all, but it's not a plan that's really going to be able to work. He goes forward with it anyway. Why? He's desperate. He's panicking. He has to do something. So, and in the end, things work out, other than people dying. But yeah, I think he's exactly as capable as we're seeing. I don't think there's any more secret skills that he's bringing to the table. I'm still wondering about his wife, though.
The original Black Widow.
So we come back.
So we come back and Peggy confesses everything.
Everything. And
now we understand her motivation. Her motivation is to point out Dr. Leviathan's doing bad things over there. And we only have 19 minutes or less.
90. I think it was 90.
Oh, I wrote down 19.
Well, you just read the Morse code wrong. That's all.
It's possible. I'm a little rusty.
Happens to everyone. Happens to everyone.
It's been a long time since I've had, you know, the little walkie-talkie as a kid with the Morse code on it.
Oh, I had that too.
So I could beep it out.
I had that too.
Oh, it never worked, man. Dude.
It did work.
Well,
it just was impossible to decode as quickly as they were beeping it at you.
Exactly.
So yeah, Sousa, he's not convinced. She says that the doctor's a killer, and he's a real killer. I could tell by the way he rubs his nose. And Dooley, he's not impressed. So she has one last trump card to play.
Well, let's back up to Dooley real quick. Not only is he not impressed, he finds it completely unbelievable that she could run her own investigation without any of them noticing. And again, she comes back to the, I'm invisible.
Yeah. I mean, she's definitely the other half of this Black Widow kind of character. I mean, they are the mirror images of each other.
And you're right, because they've made the point in the past. I mean, Dr. Leviathan said it. Women are often not seen.
Yeah.
And she's proven them out here. You didn't see me, so I could do it.
Yeah. So she brings
trump
out
card.
Her trump card. The one thing she has left to possibly convince them that she is telling the truth. And basically she lays it all out on the table. She's already confessed to everything. But here she gives up the one thing that meant the most to her and that is, personally speaking, the one thing she really has to give, the one thing she can really the one thing that would hurt her to give up, I should say. Her two notebooks and her file folder, you know, they're not really that big of a deal. But this is Steve's blood now. And she's giving it to them to prove to them that she is on the level, to prove to them that she is willing to sacrifice anything in order to stop the doctor.
It could have been anybody's blood.
It could have been, but I think it works. I mean, the emotional punch is there. She's not being like Agent, you know, Hydra Angie, who's, you know, faking the waterworks.
Where were you, Angie?
I don't think we're ever going to see Angie again. Ever.
Was she at the club meeting?
Well, she must have been. Yeah, she must have been hanging out with Hydra or something.
Maybe Thompson knows.
So.
My name's Angie. I've been Hydra for 3 weeks.
Yeah. Hi, Angie. I'm Thompson. I'm in SSR. What are you doing? Are you still flipping burgers? Yeah. No, you're serving burgers. Never mind. Anyway, Sousa decides, because of the Steve's blood thing, that he can believe her. Dooley does not trust Carter, but Dooley trusts Sousa's gut. Is this new? It seems new to me.
It's very new.
I appreciate this coming from Dooley.
It's fast, though.
It is a quick turn.
I mean, Sousa, for the first almost 20, 25 minutes, is so angry at her. And now he's like, oh, yeah, well, I've seen the vial. I'm good. Yep,
yeah, but,
I'm fine.
Well, but what's happened is he started seeing something in her. She was this liar. She was this traitor. He didn't want that to be true. Last episode, he, you know, if you run, it means it's true. And then she runs, and you can see there's pain as he sees this turn, or as he perceives this turn. Now, it's okay. You know, everything adds up that she's saying. It's okay. We're back to where we were. Or if not back to where we're at least much, much closer to the true Carter. So I go with Sousa. I go with Dooley trusting Sousa, but that seems the more unlikely and the more the quicker turn for me is that Dooley's like, yeah, I trust Sousa's gut. Sousa's proven himself, and that's a good thing. I mean, it's not that it's coming out of nowhere, but yeah. So here we have then Dooley going back to the office with Ringmaster, and it's tense. Ringmaster, you know, we've got work to do. We got stuff to do. And this is our halfway mark.
That's what Dr. Leviathan does. And again, at our halfway mark, Dr. Leviathan makes the comment that they have something important they need to do.
Yes.
And what and is that it? Was, for me, was the turn, because my DVR at that point said that was exactly 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And so we come back from that commercial. We have Thompson, and Sousa. And two red shirts going over to the other building. And now you're seeing some respect that Thompson has for Sousa. Is this a too quick of a turn here?
Well, you say respect. At a certain point, he was still being nosy big brother. You know, you got to shoot to kill. I tangled with the little one. You don't want to tangle with the tall ones, you know. He's still kind of being a little bossy.
I didn't take that as bossy. I took that as genuine concern.
I took it as Ward and Fitz.
No. I took it as two colleagues, and he's saying to him, you know what? You are capable. I feel like you think you're capable, and that's good. I'm feeling like you're capable, and that's good. But, dude, you're not capable enough, man, because she's stone cold. Killer. She is Chuck Norris in heels, man. So.
That's right. They even knew about Chuck Norris in 46.
Well, he was born the day Hitler died, right?
I don't know. Oh, why don't you talk? I have to find this out now.
So anyway, I'm liking the scene there. You've got... Well, we're going to I'm going to stick with no,
he did not. He totally was not born the day Hitler died.
Well, you know.
He was born in 40.
Okay. All right.
He was 6, but still a legend at 6.
He would totally could have made himself known.
Who says totally. That?
What?
Chuck Norris was born the day Hitler died.
One of those internet meme things, right?
Don't believe everything you see on the internet, please.
I didn't say I believed it.
Okay, go on.
I'm liking the scene here. You've got... I did get a chuckle here, but... Dottie and Sousa have a little bit of a... cat and mouse kind of thing going. Very noir feeling where it's shadows and... And they're looking for each other, and it's quick. It doesn't go for very long, but then she totally just takes him down, beats him with his own crutch, And then I had – this is my laugh moment. He's on the ground. He turns around. He's thrown like a thing at her. And then he turns around. He's reaching for something. It looks like he's reaching for a mop. He just rolled the mop bucket at her. And it looks like he's reaching for the mop. And right when he's reaching for that mop, she turns around and runs away. And I'm thinking, what in the world? He's reaching for a mop. And no, it's the gun by the mop. But it totally threw me.
Nothing is terrifying to anyone than a mop.
Oh, seriously. I mean, trust me. I know a mop can do some damage, my friend. I know this, but.
I always hated mop shifts when I worked food service. Just saying.
So she wants to get out of there before she takes a bullet, and down she goes, which is a nice little scene down the stairs.
Super cool moves.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Dooley, he's compromised, and he's been totally hypnotized. He goes into the science room. Ringmaster wants item 17. They get rid of all the science guys, and they find the vest. And I'm thinking, oh, a bulletproof vest. What's going on there? And no, it's very delicate. It's very delicate. We're going to take it with us right now.
And I'm trying to figure out what vest is this? What superhero has a vest?
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking bulletproof. I mean, I'm just stuck on that, you know. And that's why it didn't make sense to me when he's, like, giving it back to Dooley. But Dooley's working against the hypnotism. You know, he says, I've got this. I can't give this to you. Yeah, you can. Focus. Okay. And then he gives him the vest.
Again, reality creeping in.
Yeah. And so Dr. Leviathan goes outside, going downstairs and outside to the escape car where Dottie is picking him up. And he's late, or she's late, rather. And she says, we've been compromised. He says, it's okay. It's irrelevant. And she asks, shall we proceed to the next phase? And all I can think of is, yes, let's actually have Thanos do something other than sit in a chair. And let's move on to the next phase.
Isn't that my line?
Yeah, but that's why I thought it. I wouldn't have thought that line if it hadn't been for you.
Okay.
Thompson comes out. He sees, but yeah. So, the one thing we did skip over then was that Dooley also put Jarvis and Carter in cuffs.
And locked the door, literally, by breaking the key.
Yeah, in the interrogation room.
Somebody's going to have to replace that door. And I hope Dooley understands this is going to come straight out of his salary.
Well, I don't think we have to worry about that. I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, but the guy's not drawing a salary anymore. Just saying.
All right.
And so, let's see, coming back from commercial here, it's getting more tense.
I'm not tense yet, and we'll get to a description of my emotional physical reaction in a little bit.
Yeah, I was surprised. I got a couple messages from you about this.
I'm not tense, but with this first scene where we come back and we see Jarvis and Peggy working together, mm-hmm. I did kind of find this is amusing.
Yeah, it was.
It was a nice little comedy respite. Yeah.
A spray of glass.
Comedic.
Spray of glass, a spray of bullets. They get the table through the window, and then, the one-way mirror, and realize we're still attached to a table. No, two-way mirror, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
One-way.
You see through one way.
I'm always so confused by that.
It doesn't matter. They broke the mirror, but then they realize we're still attached to the table. It's funny. It's goofy, but not too goofy. I'm enjoying myself. I'm laughing. I'm with it.
It's appropriate. You know what it felt like? It felt like a little comedy duo from the 40s.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And then Dooley goes home. I mean, we kind of were wondering about if he was just going to be going home. I did put in my notes. I did write this. I said, is this home? It feels ethereal. You get Dooley talking to his wife and saying, I feel like I should be angry. I feel like I should be scared. but I'm not. I just want to come home.
Oh, man.
Little boy's painting the birdhouse or whatever it is.
And he looks over at his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And in the hub, at this point, I hit pause.
Why did you hit pause, Daniel?
The dog had to go outside.
Okay.
So there they are on my TV, paused, Mr. and Mrs. Dooley looking at each other. And I sent Ben this message. A buddy really hated the school scene with kids, killing kids because it felt real. I'm getting a bad similar feeling right now. I'm kind of sick. Posset Dooley's looking at each other and my stomach feels sick. And basically what my buddy had said about the Black Widow school piece is it made him very, very uncomfortable even compared to things that he had seen in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. where, you know, you saw people being brutal with other people. But I think for him, part of the thing that was a problem with the school, the Black Widow school thing, where it made him sick to the stomach, was that he had recently seen something about most likely in Africa, children being used as soldiers and doing brutal things to each other. And so seeing this early Black Widow school where a little girl kills a little girl made him feel ill because he knew that there's places where such evil does exist. And with this scene with the Dooleys, I'm like, he's totally going to kill his family. And he's totally going to kill his kids. And he's totally going to kill his wife. And it made me worried, not tense, but worried and sick because it's a piece of domestic violence. And there's some truth to that, sadly, in the real world because that sort of evil does exist. And I was really –
But then
the fact that I knew Dooley couldn't control it made me even more upset because, again, as we keep mentioning, reality creeps in. And if reality's creeping in, he would know that he did this thing but also maybe not know that he couldn't control it. And just – I was totally like waiting for him to just kill his family.
Yeah. Meanwhile – so like you're sending me these emotional – you sent a couple other things too right after that. And I'm like, okay, I don't get it because I'm just going along with it because I'm not pausing, obviously, because I'm watching live television on my regular TV that has no kind of DVR recording or anything like that. I have to go at the pace they send it to me. And, man, I see him in that vest. He's on the – you know, I know he's not really there now and
Yeah, I get it. I had too much time to think about it.
You had way too much time to think. I think you went way further than they were hoping people would go with that scene. I think they wanted people to feel off kilter, but I didn't get any feeling that he was going to do anything to his family.
I do want to point out, though, before you go to him sitting at the desk, again, reality crept into his hallucination.
With the
because he talked about the fact that he let a man in custody go.
Oh. Yeah, no, he is aware, and I think he's trying to fight against this. I mean, we saw it in the outside the elevator where he says, "I can't give this to you." Focus. Okay, yes, I can. So there he is, and he's wearing a prototype for a new system of armor. It's a battery that overheats.
Experimental. Howard's not so good with his engineering sometimes.
Well, look, I mean, you've seen Tony and hit going through all of his experimentation with armor and that kind of thing. But what are we supposed to take away with this prototype for a new system of armor, this battery?
And when it locks in place, you're basically not going to get it off.
Which doesn't make – okay. That whole bit, I'm just – why would you invent something like that?
You get – the scientists can't crack it. They pull them out of the detention room. They don't know how to get it off. Jarvis doesn't know how to get it off.
I mean, what's the idea here? Why would you make something that when it's going to really harm you, it's –
I don't think the intent was to really harm you. I think we're entering a period called the Cold War in about 2 years. And some forward thinkers, and Tony Stark was a futurist, so perhaps Howard was a futurist too, realizes that the greatest threat against the United States of America is the Soviet Union.
Uh-huh.
And so it would make sense to have an armor or a bulletproof vest-like thing that was self-warming. Obviously, Howard did not want to create a vest as a safety device that melts you.
No, but I'm talking about the lockdown. Like, well, it can't be taken off. And if you try and take it off, it's going to blow up in your face. And, I mean, it sets up the situation. It sets up Dooley having the heroic death. The scientists don't know what to do. What do you mean? I mean, I don't know what to do. He's burning up even more. You know, tell Laura I love her.
Pin. Here's the other pin. I want you to take a string and tie it to the first pin when he threw her out of the SSR.
Yeah, she's back in. I mean, as
new
far
pin.
As...
Not only is she back in, he now gets the whole picture because he's looking at her and he says, you find some words I can't say because we're on a clean network. Who did this? You find him. Not Thompson, not Sousa. She's looking at him, at her. He's looking at her.
He's looking at her, yeah.
You find the person who did this because he knows she can.
And
he's
will.
Seeing the whole picture now. She's the only – he knows that he was – that Dr. Leviathan conned him and had – and compromised him. He knows that she ran her own investigation successfully. She's the one in the SSR who can do this.
Bingo.
Yep. Pin to pin. You're out. You're in.
And then he's out the window. Just in time.
Whew.
Yeah.
Moment of silence?
Yeah, poor Dooley. We hardly knew him.
Well, we had six episodes. Okay. Seven episodes.
Well, here's the thing with Dooley. This is tragic. I mean, we've waited to get to know who is it from this group of, you know, the boys club. Who is it that we're going to actually like? And I like what they did with Dooley. They did enough with him that we do actually like him. He does come around on Carter, but he doesn't change who he actually is as far as, like, when he turns, it's not like, where did that character trait come from?
I learned all my lessons, kids.
Yeah, yeah. He's not still quite Dooley. There. You know, he's still Dooley.
He's dedicated.
And, you know, he's dedicated to getting the job done. He's for a while now, suspected that Stark wasn't really who they were looking for. And yeah, I wasn't expecting this. I wasn't expecting to see Dooley die. It made for a tragic moment. It made for a tragic episode.
Well, and it explains story-wise why he's not in the short.
Yeah, it does. It does. So we come back from the commercial break, and it's cleanup time. And this is where Carter is. I did this. And I'm just thinking, no, Peggy, you didn't. Evil men did this, not you.
Well, and again, Jarvis is even kind of misdirecting that. You know, Jarvis is making the comment that it's Howard's inventions.
Yeah. And see, I take issue a little bit with some of that because
I do too.
Because, you know, you can say, oh, it's my fault. But it's not your fault. You're not the one who put a vest on someone to superheat it and explode him.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, maybe Tony created it, but he put it in a vault.
Howard.
Howard. He put it in a vault with the intention that no one would ever see this. Maybe until it was perfected. But even then, he was afraid of the wrong hands getting a hold of it. And who are the right hands? He doesn't know. And so, yeah, I mean, it comes back to when I was teaching eighth grade, I did a little social experiment. It was very, very quick. We were having a conversation about, you know, responsibility and morality and some stuff like that. And I asked my class, okay, so if I leave a CD player, this is years ago, in my car and leave the door unlocked and it gets stolen, whose fault is it that it was stolen? 90% of the class said it was my fault.
No, it's Hydra's.
Well, 90% of the class said it was my fault for
totally
leaving
Hydra.
for leaving the door unlocked and leaving the CD player in there. And not, I mean, then you had 10% of the class who said it was the person who took it. It was their fault. And it just was, it's that, that's the kind of thing that Peggy's doing right now.
Well, and it's a common comic book trope. So you could expect to see it in a comic book series. I was reading She-Hulk by Dan Slott today, and there's a sequence of events where somebody gets hurt, and She-Hulk is like, it's my fault that they're hurt. And somebody at one point says, yeah, what about the villain?
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the famed Batman debate. You know, the fact that Batman doesn't kill Joker, whose fault is it that all these people die afterwards? Then, you know, Joker's going to get loose and he's going to kill people. Who's responsible for those people who died?
That's, I mean, this is a
debate that occurs all the time. Now,
it's
this
a different
Peggy
debate,
issue
because that's a pattern.
Yeah. This Peggy issue is far from that extreme, but it's still that basic sort of idea. Well, it's my fault. No. Dr. Leviathan's fault. He's the bad man.
Yeah.
He locked the clasps.
Now, you have when I say you, I mean Carter. You have every right to, you know, want to extract revenge. You have every right to take – you feel like it's your responsibility to stop him. But, yeah – as much as I take issue with the idea of her saying that, the character moment rings true. This is not the first time she's taken on that kind of responsibility.
Until Jarvis says, no, it's Howard's inventions. And shakes his face at the sun.
Well, he's
his
angry.
Fist is shaking.
He's angry.
Those are adamant inventions. It's their fault.
No, he's blaming Howard. He's blaming Howard. And again, I feel like that rings true as a character moment, if not true as, you know, the truth of what's happening in that situation. So did they take Steve's blood? No. I fully expected that to be one of the things that they would have taken, but they didn't. They took item 17.
So is Steve's blood just a red herring?
I don't
because
think
when
so.
Dottie broke into the hotel room, I was stressed out about the blood, and she didn't take the blood now. Dr. Leviathan doesn't take the blood now.
No, Dottie got the photos and saw item 17. And so what does item 17 do? No one knows. Jarvis doesn't know. The scientists don't know. You know who does know? Ringmaster and Dottie. They know what it's going to do. They put it in the baby
carriage.
Do you
think item 17 was used at the Battle of Fennel?
I'm positive.
Well, I hope so, since they keep mentioning the Battle of Fennel. So.
Yeah, no, I think that's the one thing that I was kind of wondering about. Okay, is this something to do with that? And so they go to a theater, leave the baby carriage in there, and let the smoke out. And as the mist flows, people breathe it in, and they go crazy and kill each other in a violent rage.
Just like in – some of you know what I'm talking about.
What?
Just – I recently saw a movie that has a very similar plot.
What movie?
Kingsman.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, totally something similar happens.
So – that's where we end. That's our cliffhanger moment when the some theater goers and a theater employee discover the gory, horrific remains of what happens when this mist from item 17 is released. It's not a good sight. Not pleasant. And that's where we're ending, and we're going into our final episode next week. So, Daniel, what's your final thought here about this episode?
I liked it. The more we talked about it, too, the more I liked it. Truthfully, I think sometimes when you're sitting there and you're watching it, it's going by so fast, and we're trying to keep notes and keep things straight. And so today I felt a little off balance, but as we talked about it, I really did like this episode. We got a little comedy. We got some personality development. We got Peggy calling out the invisibility of women in the 1940s and beyond, to be blunt. It was a good episode.
Yeah, I'm also liking it. I'm liking that we don't have Peggy spouting modern feminism. We just have Peggy being, you know, the best Peggy she can be, and it's definitely a precursor to modern attitudes. But she doesn't have, you know, the modern attitude and coming from the context of being able to look back at the 40s and at, you know, her situation.
And I'm really proud of myself.
Why is that?
We put Dooley in a glowing hot vest, and I didn't make the obvious joke.
What, that he's a hot vest?
You said it.
The vest.
Brian, take note, please.
You can play back the recording, but
I know you said hot vest.
So anyway, yeah, good.
You totally had me for a minute.
Good episode. And here's what I was hoping would happen. When I had those couple episodes in the middle there that just weren't clicking for me, my hope was that those episodes would be worthwhile because we'd get better. And I feel like I'm in a boat, in a kind of a boat shape. You know, I'm in the back of the boat where it was up, and then we're coming down those middle episodes, and now we're on another arc back up again. And those middle episodes, I'm going to be totally forgiving if I binge watch Agent Carter, which is quite possible this summer, if it's on Netflix especially. I'm glad that we got those two episodes or three episodes. No, two episodes, I think. It was just two that I kind of was down on. I'm glad for them because they brought us here. And I feel like we're on this nice upswing. I hope that next episode continues the upswing, but I'm pleased with this episode. I laughed. I felt tense. And I felt empathy for the characters, especially the tragic Dooley situation and Carter just smacking her forehead against the wall. They're just not letting her. They're just not listening, you know? And I liked it. I liked it. So, yeah. Snafu.
Is this on to our field reports then, sir?
It is. It is. But Snafu, it was a hit for me. Here we go.
Shield field report.
Okay, Daniel.
Got a lot to do today.
Not a lot to do. Do we?
Can I go ahead and just read a tweet real quick?
Sure.
I have some bad news coming from Agent H. Keith Lyons. He says, sorry, guys. Won't be able to get feedback tonight. Going to the movies should be a gas.
Oh.
So, yeah, won't hear from that agent. Hopefully he likes his film.
All right. Well, okay, we got two email, we got two feedbacks about this topic we're about to jump into right now. One was from Agent Travis, and the other was from another agent who left a voicemail. So, Daniel, I'm going to get that voicemail set up. Do you want to go ahead and read from Agent Travis, subject, rifle used by Dottie?
All right. Agent Travis, by the way, he gives us a lot of information, and he gave us the permission to summarize some of it. Part of this comes from my concern that, hey, that rifle doesn't really look like what I would call a sniper rifle. It looks much more like the thing from The Rifleman. So his point is the rifle doesn't make the person holding it a sniper rifle. The person holding the rifle makes it a sniper rifle. A trained sniper is a better shot than I am, period. Typically, the rifles used by snipers are either bolt action, like the sniper in Saving Private Ryan. You have to manually operate the bolt to eject a spent casing, or semi-automatics like the ones used in the opening scene of Jack Reacher. One pull of the trigger fires one bullet, and then the spent casing is automatically ejected. The kind of rifle used by Dottie was a lever action, which, as Daniel said, is similar to the rifle used in The Rifleman. I apologize. Some of you know what that is. This is Daniel. But obviously, it wasn't the same model. It just operated the same way. I rewatched the scene a couple times, but couldn't see any manufacturer marks. So I have no idea on the model, and imfdb.org, a great site for guns in the movies, hasn't been updated with any information about it either. Lever actions aren't typically used in military operations for a variety of reasons, and this was true back in the 1940s as well. That being said, considering the environment she was in, that rifle would have been an effective weapon. So in short, Agent Travis points out that I was kind of focused on the weapon, where in fact where I needed to be focused on was Dottie. Because if Dottie was skilled, she could use the lever action, as he would point out, as a appropriate sniper weapon. Where if you weren't a skilled person, it didn't matter if you had the finest, well-tuned, quote-unquote, bolt-action gun. You still were not going to be effective. So it comes down to Dottie, not the gun.
And to me, my point was it came down to the job that needed to be done. And what was the job that needed to be done? Make us feel really tense while she reads Morse code. We have another message about the gun. Maybe.
Possibly.
Here it comes.
Hello, this is Agent Pichon from Northern Michigan, calling to let you know some details about the weapon used by Dottie. It is an original Henry rifle from the 1860s, the precursor of the Winchester rifle. When I first saw it, I thought it was an 1866 Winchester, but I later noted it is missing the loading gate in the receiver, and a close look at the front of the barrel showed that it had what is called the loading shroud. So it's an 1866 Henry, a very elegant but bizarre choice for Dottie to use, but there is a historical check on that. In the 1860s, the Turkish government bought a lot of Henry rifles, and there was a border war between Turkey and Russia in the late 1860s. So it's possible that that's when it fell into the Soviet hands. Anyway, thought I'd just let you know. Hope it's not too late to update you guys properly. See ya.
Daniel, so here's what I get from that message. Do you know what I get from that message?
Somebody did their homework?
Yes, definitely. But basically what I get from the message is you and I know nothing about guns compared to, you know.
Well, and I full out admit it. As you know, Ben, but not everybody may know this. My education was military history. But the thing about military history is I studied generals. I didn't study guns. Mm-hmm. And if I learned anything over that time period is much like a collector of comic books, you know, when you're in that hobby, you know a lot more than people who are quote unquote academically trained at times.
Yes. And so to our friend and hobbyist.
The new prize winner of the day.
I mean, that's above and beyond what we
You, Ben. I was about to request the same.
Yeah. So, and thanks to Travis as well. I mean, let's face it. It's good. It's good information, and yeah.
And okay. This is why we love this show and love our agents is because, again, this is something outside of our expertise, and we get two messages helping clarify the situation.
So we did get an email. I'm going to keep this one anonymous. And there was some nice feedback about some things from last episode that you and I talked about. But she actually asked not to read her email, so I hope that we're honoring the letter of or the spirit of what she was saying by not reading all of the good stuff and skipping to the end here where she has some really good, really good thoughts and totally fit what happened in this episode. She says, I think you two might have missed something about why Dr. Ivchenko had Agent Yauch kill himself by walking into the street after a drink rather than by shooting himself in the head or jumping from a window. If a guy with alcohol in his system is struck by a car right outside a bar, the death just looks like an accident caused by the impaired judgment of someone who might have had too much to drink. But If a guy shoots himself in the head or jumps from a window, the death looks like a suicide. I could be wrong, but I suspected Evchanko wanted the death to look like an accident rather than a suicide to avoid anyone investigating the matter. As far as we know, Yauch has no reason to be suicidal, and thus his suicide would have raised a red flag. Evchanko is, after all, a psychiatrist and is known to have been in Yauch's company shortly before he died, so he likely would have been questioned had the circumstances of his death seemed suspicious. Just a thought. Yep.
Yeah, I think Agent D's right on top of it there.
Yep. So, yeah, very, very good feedback there. Would you like to read Agent Carl's email?
Well, I require that I read Agent Carl's email because, as he says, Jack and Angie are Hydra and possibly my wife. And that's
now, is he saying Carl's that Jack wife. And Angie are possibly his wife?
No, I think he's saying that his wife is Hydra.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But definitely not Mrs. Butcher. Totally not Hydra. Totally, totally, totally. And this is why I love Agent Carl, because he says, of course Angie is Hydra. That has been so obvious from the first episode that I didn't want to keep harping on it. Daniel has been spot on from the beginning. Do I give him a no prize, Ben?
I've got the button, so...
I'm so close. For Ben and the rest of the non-believers, I give you the acting scene from Sin to Error. Angie and Jack are working as a team. Nobody was buying the grandma story until Jack came to the aid of his fellow Hydra agent by him accepting – I'm doing quotes, by the way, here – accepting the story and showing obvious discomfort because of it. All the rest of the agents in the room knew that they too had to react that way because they all want to be like Jack. And Angie has once again proven to Peggy that she can be trusted. I also think she passed along a message to Jack that she would let him know when Peggy left her room. Why else would they have gone back to the hallway at just the right moment to save Peggy from Dot? Go ahead. Run it. Just run it.
Run what?
Give it to him. Give it to him. This is brilliant.
Yes?
The no prize winner of the day.
You can't just give him out willy-nilly, my friend.
This is spectacular, Carl. A little more research in communities that call their grandmothers gam-gam. Guess which group of people favors the term? I'm thinking it might be grandchildren. Wait for it. German immigrants from the 1910s through the 1930s. Of course, we're not going to find out that they are Hydra this season. They have to remain covert in order to infiltrate S.H.I.E.L.D. Carl is so correct. One last thing. Is Peggy going to get transferred to a different SSR office and get busted down to the untrusted coffee girl again? If she doesn't, how do we get aligned with the one shot? Have a good week. Hope things get better for you both. Keep it Marvel. Well, the answer is new chief.
Yeah. That's the question that I've been just really curious about, is aligning it with the one shot. And this is one of those situations where you can see why they maybe didn't want to do one shots about like Black Panther or some of those characters, because once you do it, you can't retract it. And so the one shot itself feels like the purpose of the one shot feels like it's the same purpose as these eight episodes, or seven, depending on how you want to count it.
So totally eight.
Got a message from, Agent Lestew. Subject, Civil War. Message. Hey, guys. I'm writing to you after leaving the Great Lakes Avengers headquarters. Well, actually, it's the basement of an abandoned VFW building in Marquette, but you get the point. Anyway, Mr. Immortal and I were talking about the upcoming Captain America Civil War movie, and we came to some very interesting conclusions. All I can say is that guy is off his rocker. I had to convince him there is no way they can take the almost 100 issues of the Civil War event and boil it down to 2-hour movie. He was convinced that if they can make another Hobbit movie, they can give Cap his due. You know the worst part of this? Monkey Joe was laughing at us. Flatman brought up the fact that the only way you could really even do the event justice was, and he said we might want to put a spoiler warning here, but the organ music is so long. Just spoiler for Civil War if you haven't read it yet or haven't seen the big event that came out of it. Anyway, the only way they could do the event justice was to kill off Cap at the end. And Tony would need to become director of S.H.I.E.L.D. in Avengers 2.
Three.
Still not sure how to mash Spider-Man in there. Speaking of which, Squirrel Girl has one heck of a crush on that boy. I told her to keep that to herself. She wouldn't want the Goblin knowing about it. Anyway, Bertha wanted me to tell you guys that she is super excited for the penultimate episode of Peggy Carter. Have a great episode, guys. Let's do Friend of the Great Lakes Avengers, eh? Up here in the UP, eh?
Yeah. Somebody's a happy boy.
Well, I saw on Facebook, he just finished reading through every single issue and tie-in issue of the Civil War event, which is like 100 issues. And, yeah, we speculated about this before, about killing off Cap in his next movie and shifting Winter Soldier into the role of the Captain.
He's got a big contract.
He does.
Hey, I'm going to go over to Facebook real quick.
Okay.
Agent Dylan has two questions for us. Could Dr. Russian Dude have invented the compliance method? Just saying.
Yes, I think that there is definite possibilities there.
Well, and the thing that I think we learned in the first half of the season was Whitehall was willing to take stuff from other people.
Yeah.
He was willing, to take the best science. And then the other question that Agent Dylan asks is, if Leviathan gets the blood, they could totally use it to make the Winter Soldier.
Yes. My only thing with that is that I think that the Winter Soldier was already almost made
by Hydra.
Before he was rescued by Hydra.
Yeah, you could argue that maybe Leviathan and Hydra work together, and the blood could explain how he handles the cryogenic sleeps. But, yeah, you'd have to get Leviathan and Hydra in the same bed.
Yeah. Which is possible. And then, is that the same person who on Facebook mentioned or asked, is item 17 going to be something misty?
Yeah.
And I think the impression there being that the Terrigen mists are somehow tied into what item 17 is.
Totally not Terrigen. We've seen Terrigen.
Yeah.
Well, let's be honest. That was rage gas.
It's true. It's true. I had some rage gas just the other night.
After a trip to Taco Bell.
It was.
Always the best rage gas.
Yeah. Speaking of the Steve's blood, though, someone mentioned that they thought they knew – they wanted to go back and listen to what – Carter said in Winter Soldier about her husband, and the context, I think that the trail that they were going on with that, I can't remember who it was. I wish I could. I don't have it in front of me, but the context caused me to think what I think they wanted me to think, being what if Steve rescued She said, Steve Rogers saved my husband's life, right?
Mm-hmm.
What if the way he saved her husband's life was because his blood was available?
Ooh.
Now, the only thing is, did she say he saved her husband's life in the war?
Ooh, we'd have to go back and look, but I hadn't thought about that. So clearly, Sousa could walk again after that moment.
Well, that's what I was thinking,
too. Or Thompson could control his rage.
I hadn't gone with Thompson, but this is from Agent Gray. Subject, I'm a 30-something woman, and I love your show. Hey, Ben and Daniel, I just wanted to put my two cents in. I'm definitely in the demographic you're hoping you haven't offended, and I love you guys. I've always felt included as part of your intended audience, and I don't feel like you assume I'm a man. I also think agents is definitely a gender-neutral term for the Welcome to Level 7 listeners. May, Carter, and Sky come to mind.
Can we pause real quick here?
Mm-hmm. Pause and the recording?
Keep talking. We did get some very nice feedback
this
week, letting us know that we are not Thompsons. And we really do appreciate that. One of the things that, did come up is, we don't have a ton of female perspective on here. We recognize that. I somewhat blame Mrs. Butcher and the fact that she refuses to watch Marvel MCU TV anymore.
Wait, we talked about blame. It's not good her point. Fault.
It's not. It's boards and the writers. But, We get it. We do. And it's been awesome tonight to have feedback from people that don't have the same perspective as us.
Yeah. So then Agent Gray goes on to say, a couple pieces of feedback from your show last week. This is her first point. A Funko Blitzkrieg button with a fake vial of Captain America's blood? Gross. Next point. I also immediately thought of Ward when Thompson said his grandmother's name was Gam-Gam or Gammy. I think Ward's was Gramsy. I think she's right there. But it did feel like a callback to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Next point. I disagree with your assumption that Ward wasn't planned to be Hydra from the beginning. Maybe not from the conception of the show, but I think he was planned as Hydra from the first episode because they made such a point of emphasizing that his espionage skills were the best since Romanoff. I felt like we really didn't get to see any of that. In fact, I often wondered why they had built him up so much in the first episode until we realized that he had been a double agent the whole time. Then it all made sense.
Now, I will pause on this. I think if anyone knew that, there was only three people, which was Joss, Jed, and Marissa.
Possibly.
I think they may have been the only three. If it was planned from the beginning, those were the only three that knew.
I do also agree with the point here that we didn't get to see any of that being... We didn't get to see Ward actually be the best since Romanoff.
No, we do not. Okay, okay.
And, yeah, okay. Next point. I was surprised when you guys didn't point out that one of your theories was confirmed in last week's episode, namely that the assassin who killed Krasinski was female. I immediately thought of you when Peggy brought it up. Nice one. Hey, Daniel. We didn't bring it up.
I thought you gloated for a long time. Maybe that was just in messages.
Maybe.
Sometimes when you pat yourself on the back, it's kind of hard for me to remember if you did it on air or via message.
It happens so often. Anyway, she says, hope this gets to you before your show tonight so you have one more piece of encouragement that you're doing a great job including your female listeners. I'm sure I'm not the only one. Agent Gray, P.S. Angie's totally not from Hydra, and the proof of that will be that they never confirm that she is Hydra.
Totally lost me in the end.
Okay. We have one more piece of feedback on my end. Do we have any more on yours?
Nope, I'm good.
All right. So I'm going to load this one up. And this is audio feedback from Agent Evan. Here we go. Here we go.
Agent Ben, Agent Daniel, if you're there, we are pinned down. Repeat, we are taking cover behind our crashed chopper. Six agents of Hydra, all carrying advanced weapons.
Incoming!
Anyway, I was really not expecting...
Sector one, all clear.
...the show to take this direction, where Peggy gets arrested so soon. In fact, I wasn't expecting her to get arrested at all. I thought by the time any of her co-workers found out anything, she would have already solved the case. Hold on just a second. And wow, the news last week about Spider-Man joining the MCU. I honestly did not expect that. I didn't think we'd ever see that sort of thing actually happen. My favorite theory that I've heard around the internet is that they'll keep the Spider-Man casting a mystery and have Spider-Man in the mask the entire time he's on the screen in Captain America Civil War or whatever movie they're going to put him in before his own movie. I think it would be a great idea, and it would keep the general public guessing about who's really behind the mask.
All clear.
Great. Good work, Agent Miller.
Thanks, sir.
All right, Agent Ben, Agent Daniel, this is Agent Miller, Operations Graduate 2010, Level 5.
Sir, counts are down. Accept the line you're using now.
All right. We better get out of here before more Hydra agents show up. This is Agent Evan, going dark.
I'm glad
Agent
they
ben,
addressed
I have
that.
I have the notebook out. I'm pretty sure that I have an audio confirmation of the death of Hydra Agent Wilhelm.
Yeah, totally. I heard the Wilhelm scream in there. And not that that's a bad thing. I do think, you know, who does that? Calls in a message in the middle of a firefight. I mean, that is dedication right there. That is dedication to that's probably the most dedicated podcast listener you can ever get. I mean, I've heard dedicated podcast listeners on other podcasts. People call in when they're running. People call in when they're driving. Well, we haven't heard from him in a little while, but yeah, I mean, to call in the middle of a firefight that's been going on I mean, let's be honest. This firefight, they've been pinned down for a week.
Behind the helicopter.
Yeah. So, yeah, that they would take the time out to watch the show and then call us about it. That's pretty incredible. So, but okay, so what do you think about the thing that he was hearing about Spider-Man?
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. Do you think they're bold enough to do it, though? Keep it under wraps?
Bold enough? Maybe. Would they be able to?
Well, you know, there's an easy way to do it.
What's that?
You don't use the same actor.
Oh, you just use a stand-in?
Yeah, I mean, Thanos.
Yeah,
Thanos wasn't rolling the first time. Apocalypse at the end of X-Men Days of Future Past. That's not the Apocalypse we're getting.
Yeah. Daniel.
So you just use somebody else.
I'm just keeping my fingers crossed. I don't know why I'm so stuck on this, but I just want to see Tobey Maguire be Spider-Man and then in his movie turn it over to some young gun actor who can be Miles Morales.
Did you find yourself patting your back this week when you were reading articles that were giving that theory?
I did a little bit. I mean, we've talked about it a little bit a long time ago, but, you know, it's not that it's not that groundbreaking of a theory. You know, we had a friend who he said he called this Spider-Man thing years ago, that Spider-Man was going to be in the MCU. And so when the news came out, he's like, I totally called it.
We're not going there again.
He said, I totally called it. And I said, no, unless you by called it, you mean you were one of like thousands of people who have been saying, I'd like this to happen. But so, yeah, if it is Tobey Maguire, yeah, I'll pat myself on the back. But I'm not going to hurt my arm doing it, you know? It'll just be a couple pats and just to make me feel good. But I'm crossing my fingers because if we do that, we get three more movies automatically just popped right into the MCU.
And we'll have some catch-up to play then.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I'm thinking about breaking them out, man. I don't think it's going to happen, to be quite honest. But like other things that I have just lodged in my brain, I'd like to see this happen as well. So, yeah, but as for that theory of keeping a mask, that avoids the need for the emotional impact of the unmasking. And what it gives you then is the element of surprise. Now, there's a very real possibility of a letdown then. They unmask it and you're like, oh, who's that guy? Is he supposed to be Peter Parker? But if they did that with Tobey Maguire, though,
it has impact.
Get it to the end of the movie, he takes off the mask, and you're like, oh my goodness. Yeah.
Wow, your voice just went up like really high pitch there.
If they did that, that's what my voice would do. And whoever I was sitting next to, maybe I would be sitting next to that couple that I go and see movies with often, you know, unintentionally, that they're split up, by the way, now, Daniel.
Oh, that's sad to hear.
Yeah.
How did their actual spouses feel?
They're
about
still
this?
Coming to the same movies, but they're just sitting in different places with different people. It's weird.
Ooh.
But anyway, yeah, you wouldn't want to sit next to me if they did that. That would elicit an actual response from me, an outward verbal response. Yeah. So.
Whew.
All that said, I think we're just about done here then, Daniel.
Yeah, I feel good about this episode. Looking forward to next week, bud.
Me too. I'm actually looking forward to next week because you know what that means?
1 week closer to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yeah, that's another total reason.
What will they become?
Yeah.
Any other thoughts, Ben?
Yeah, you know, Daniel, all this talk about visiting each other and that possibility. And I think it might not be a bad idea for me to come and visit you because then you could maybe be able to go some of the places you used to be able to go and do some of the things you used to be able to do, you know, once people got to know you. Because I know you may be universally despised in this establishment, but they barely know me.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to Welcome to Level 7. We'd love for you to join the conversation. You can leave us a voicemail at 1-77-55, the word level, and then the number 7. That's 1-775-553.
Now, Daniel, that was dumb.
It was really dumb.
That was dumb. Let's do this one instead.
That was horrible.
That was stupid. All right. So, Daniel, here we are. It's late at night. We're still podcasting. But I'm here, Daniel. You want to know why? I buried myself deep in this job the day I started.
Thank you for listening to Welcome to Level 7. We'd love for you to join the conversation. You can leave us a voicemail at 1-77-55.
That was stupid.
Yeah.
That wasn't very good.
We're totally keeping all this.
Okay. Daniel?
Yeah.
It's Daniel. You know, I was listening to you earlier talk about how bad your week was, but forgive me for not getting all pissy-eyed with your tale of woe.
Thank you for listening to Welcome to Level 7. We'd love for you to join the conversation. You can leave us a voicemail at 1-77-55, the word level.
Daniel,
number 7. That's 1-775.
That was bad.
That was bad. Okay. How about this? Daniel, you there? Daniel?
Yeah, I was coughing.
Okay. Daniel, sometimes I look back on these podcast episodes we do and I just think, I did this.
Thank you for listening to Welcome to Level 7. We'd love for you to join the conversation. You can leave us a voicemail at 1-77.
How about this, Daniel?
Yeah.
For the record, I find you repulsive.
Thank you for listening to Welcome to Level 7. We'd love for you to join the conversation. You can leave us a voicemail at 1-77-55, the word level, and then the number 7. That's 1-775-553-8357. You can also like us on Facebook, facebook.com/welcometolevel7. 7 is spelled out. Follow us on Twitter, where we are level7pod. 7 is spelled out. Or email us directly, feedback@welcometolevel7.com. 7 is spelled out. Visit our website, welcometolevel7.com, for news, reviews, and links to our RSS feeds. Our theme music is The Light Fantastic by J.S. Earls. jserls.bandcamp.com. And again, thanks for listening.
Welcome to Level 7 is a proud member of the Noodle.mx network. Find more of our award-winning podcasts to make you think, laugh, and succeed at Noodle.mx.
My brain is melting. Ben, you have two options at this point.
Okay, and what's that?
Well, I can either, at your request, explain to you how to convince your spouse who's not a fan of action movies to take you to The Kingsman on Valentine's Day.
You can try and explain that. It's not going to happen. But
or I can explain to you why you, Ben Avery, need to go see The Kingsman.
How about we go with that option? Because that is not a movie my wife would be even remotely interested in.
How does she feel about British accents?
She's okay with them.
Oh, my wife really likes them. But that's neither here nor there.
Abbey, and we, yeah, anyway, keep going.
So Kingsman is, Ben, it is an excellent deconstruction of the spy thriller, specifically James Bond films.
Okay.
Broken up in a manner that is thoughtful and funny, along with plenty of actions. And when I say they deconstruct it, they even hang lampshades on it at certain points and say, look at this. We're doing this just like in Bond or other movies of that sort. But it's in such a way that you're like, this is really kind of smart and funny, though the movie is, in fact, violent and profane. So, okay. So violent.
It's a Marvel movie too, isn't it?
What?
It's Marvel, isn't it?
No.
Is it not based on a Marvel comic?
It is based on a comic. It's not Marvel.
It's not?
It's by Mark Millar, who has written a lot of Ultimate. They wrote the Ultimates, but I'm pretty sure they didn't publish Secret Service with Marvel. I'm looking it up right now.
Is it an Icon book?
I think it's Icon.
Well, Icon is Marvel.
Oh, well, look at you, Mr. Industry Insider. Yeah, it's Icon. So there's that. If you love James Bond films, you'll love watching someone deconstruct a James Bond film in a thoughtful and intelligent way.
I do like a good James Bond movie.
But here's what I'm really a hot mess about with this movie.
What's that?
Is it possible for someone to get an Oscar for overacting, intentionally overacting?
No.
Because, you know, you remember when we talked about, you know, Banner Sr. chewing the – literally chewing?
Yes. Yes.
Samuel L. Jackson is eating the scenery in this movie to the point where when he's on the screen, you cannot look away because he is overacting in such a way that you have to watch. You have to look at him the whole time because if you're not looking at him, you're missing something. And I mean, that's the real gem for the MCU fan, is seeing Samuel L. Jackson just completely over the top. I mean, this is like Snakes on the Plane over the top, which I've only ever seen the trailer of that. But he is just incredible, and I think he needs some sort of Oscar for his overacting because it's so out there, you know it's intentional. He's doing it on purpose, and it's so good. So, so good.
Well, I'll trust you on that.
Are you going to go?
I don't know if I'm going to go.
You totally got to go see Kingsman.
I don't have to go see it. I can wait.
No, you got to see it, man.
Yeah,
it's psychedelic, dude.
It's harder for me to get to movies now.
I know. Maybe I can make a call and get you laid off.
I'd rather you didn't.
Those pictures that we have in the vault. Hopefully Leviathan doesn't get them.
Yeah, I think at that point we need to stop.
So yeah, Kingsman, big thumbs up from Agent Daniel. Agent Ben needs to go. Even though, again, not for the kids, profane and violent as can be.
Well, I'm thinking Redbox.
Okay. Well, and I will say this, one of the most profane moments, I know that they've gotten a lot of criticism for it. And they've actually – I've seen them explain it, and they straight out say, we're taking this from the Bond films or we're just making it extreme. We've heard this comment in the movies when we did our research, and so we decided, you know what? We're just going to – we're going to make it go over the top. And they do. They made it go over the top. I want to see another one.
That might happen.
It might. Really might. All right. That's all.
All right.
I didn't convince you. I'm sad.
Yeah. I'm convinced enough to want to go see it on Redbox. How's that?
Suspicious.
Okay. Later, dude.